Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. My name is Karen, your name is Kristen, and it's our 50th episode.
Woo woo!
Yeah, we've been at this for almost a year. Not quite, but very close.
Yeah.
A couple more weeks.
A year would be 52.
Right.
But 50 is a big milestone.
Yeah,
so.
It feels... I'm not, like, surprised that we got this far, because we've been podcasting for a while, so, like, I knew we would stick with it and stuff, but it's still nice to be like, oh, yeah, we have 50 episodes under our belts.
We almost made it a year. 50 episodes is big. Like, some podcasts, I've had podcasts that lasted 7 episodes. And then we all lost track of what we were supposed to be doing, and poof, it disappeared into the ether. So, you know.
I know exactly the podcast you're talking about.
I tried.
And I think some of our other ones, like Rewatchable, has literally like 300 some episodes.
We can blame Buffy for half of that.
Yeah, literally. But like, so like Book Hype never got that many. I don't even know if we made it to like 100 on Book Hype.
I was going to say, I think we were somewhere in the 80s or 90s when it kind of fizzled out.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time, that one.
We finished. Didn't we finish the show-ish?
Not really.
Not quite.
We never got around to the finale, but... All I'm saying is, 50 episodes, pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
We're still going strong. We still have lots of ideas, lots of stuff to talk about. Show hasn't even come out yet. We're going to be around for a while.
Yep.
Hope you're not sick of us.
That's right.
If you are sick of us, I guess you could contact us, but we prefer nice messages. At Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. Before we get into our 50th episode celebration extravaganza, we have some news and updates. There's actually a good mix of stuff this week, some new stuff, some exciting stuff, little bit of everything, I kind of feel like. So the first thing I want to talk about is the trailer. We're a week out now from when the trailer dropped and all of that. It has 5.4 million views on Twitter. That was from, like, I can't remember if it was Disney Plus or Percy Series that tweeted that. I think it was the Disney Plus account.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, but 5.4 million views, has 3.8 million on YouTube. That's not bad. That's pretty good.
I don't know who it was, but someone said those were Marvel numbers.
Yeah.
And it's pretty close. I mean, most of Marvel's trailers are 6.5 million or 7.3. So, like, 5.4 is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, that's not that far off from that. And I, you know, I still see people on Twitter being like, oh, there's a Percy Jackson TV show coming out? Like, they still don't know. And I'm like...
Have you not known? 50 episodes. Start now.
Yeah. You mean you haven't made this your entire life? Okay, that's fair. But, yeah, so I feel like those numbers will only grow as we get closer to the show. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess we should just jump ahead to Rick's blog, because it kind of has to do with that, too. So he wrote a blog on September 17th, and he basically was talking about the behind-the-scenes of being at D23. I think this is labeled like Return to Vancouver or something.
Yeah.
Because it was after D23. He's back in Canada. And he was saying that there was tons of support from the cast and crews of the other Disney shows. He said it feels a lot like a family. This is what they were talking about when they said Disney's like a family. Lots of kids coming up to Rick thanking him for being a part of their childhood and stuff like that. And I feel like you could really feel the love being reciprocated from him. I think that... You know, he's been at this for a long time, and I'm sure that he's met so many fans, but I can't imagine that ever gets less exciting and endearing to hear kids be that excited.
Well, and it has to mean something a little extra special to have kids now coming up to him and thanking him for these books that were published 10 years ago.
Yeah.
12, like... I mean, we all, you know, we all think about these big series like Hunger Games and Harry Potter and whatever, and they last, and people, you know, love them, and they share them, and they pass them down. But, like, I don't think any author assumes that their books are going to be that or could be that. So, like, I'm sure it's got to be extra special that, like, you know, all of these fans who read the books now have children of their own mm-hmm. and have passed them down and said, here, I want you to read these. These are fantastic. Like, there's just... I feel like that's just extra cute.
Yeah, because there's, you know, been a bunch of books that'll come out each year, and, like, there's always, you know, the top book of the year or whatever. That usually doesn't last. Like, that yeah. usually is, okay, by the next year, everybody's moved on to the next thing. So when you have a lasting legacy like this, the fact that Percy Jackson and the Olympians is still a New York Times best-selling series, like, it's constantly in the top 10 mm-hmm. on that chart... That's a lot, and I think that we kind of, not that we take it for granted, but, like, I kind of forget about that sometimes, yeah. that it's still going strong, yeah. so.
It's kind of the quiet success, because yeah. the people that are really big fans know about it and talk about it and love it, but, like, the rest of the world would go, Percy who?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of people in the world who I don't think understand or know anything about yeah. this series still. And that's disturbing, but hopefully going to change, because yeah. things like a Disney Plus TV show will change the number of people who have access to that, who maybe look into it, mm-hmm. and so I'm sure there will be a whole new surge in readership, too, over the next few years.
Yeah, that's I think just awesome. It could definitely touch a much wider audience, despite the fact that it already has a huge audience, but mm-hmm. I think Disney will bring in some new people, and that's always exciting.
Agreed.
We do not gatekeep Percy Jackson here.
No. All the kids, all the new people, read yeah. the books!
Yeah.
Find your person, because they've got everybody in there.
Yeah. So, I loved this part. Rick fanboyed over Harvey Guillen, who is from What We Do in the Shadows, Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows. And I was like, how could you not? Because he is so great. Oh my gosh, I love him in that show so much. I love him on, like, Instagram and Twitter. He's really funny. He's really great. He was in, he's in a few episodes of the... Harley Quinn animated series. He plays Nightwing, and it's just, he's really good there too. And so I saw it going around that, like, I think Becky had tweeted about him photobombing some of their interviews and stuff, because I think he was just walking by, and I thought it was a hint that he was going to be in the show. Oh. And I was like, what? Like, I would be so into that. I don't think it is.
I mean...
But...
He could play a satyr.
You know what? That's what I was thinking, too, for some reason.
He could be one of the Council of Cloven Elders.
But I don't want to hate him.
He can be the cute ones. They're not all cranky.
Yeah.
Like, there are some cranky ones. But, like, he can be one of the cute, supportive ones. Or, I mean, there's definitely a role.
Yeah. We could come up with something.
I mean, he could be Paul Blofus. Like, he's gentle and sweet enough yeah, to be Paul Blofus.
Yeah, I mean,
Blofus.
I would like that. That would be cool.
Right? I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas at the wall.
Just make a role for him. It doesn't have to be from
Rick,
the books.
Write a new character.
I don't think that he would have any problem doing that. He was really excited to
nope,
see him.
Nope, I'm sure he wouldn't.
Yeah, that was great. So, he also talked a little bit about the trailer in this blog post. One of the things was about the Greek and English letters being mixed on the signs that we had talked about. He says, the lettering looks perfectly normal to me, unless, wait, are your brains hardwired for ancient Greek? Oh, you're demigods, of course. It all makes sense now. And I love that it was a little tongue-in-cheek thing. Like, he's got to be a little sassy sometimes.
Well, this is kind of what I was wondering. Yeah. I don't know. I think I mentioned it when we were talking yeah. about it. Like, I kind of wondered if the jumble of letters with the mix of Greek characters was supposed to be like a... Their brains are translating it, yeah. and it is in ancient Greek because it's easier for them or something. I don't know. Like, I was like, that's so, you know, could be weird. And then to see him say this, I was yeah. like, okay, that's kind of funny.
I, in the movies, we actually saw them, like, switch. In the trailer, we didn't see those signs switch, but it was also just a quick glance at it. So, again, I don't really know if it's for artistic reasons or if it's because of that.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't really care. It's yeah. not a detail that I'm going to find. Over, you know, if it's in there for artistic reasons, it's a little silly to mix those because it doesn't really make sense, but, like, I get that they want it to make it in a Greek font, you know,
yeah.
so
yeah,
whatever.
What god's child would want that much chaos and would just
right,
like, who's making those signs that
I mean
would bring
Apollo
that much
I feel like Apollo
maybe
they would decorate and they would probably want a little bit of chaos there.
So maybe just blame it on Apollo.
Maybe it was the Stoll brothers. They did it. Yeah.
just to drive Annabeth and others crazy. Yep. Like, if so, I mix the letters,
okay,
drive them.
That's my new headcanon. It was the Stoll Brothers. They totally did it on purpose to annoy people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Wouldn't that be hilarious if that was, like, a plot point? Mm-hmm. Like, a mention in the show? Annabeth is like, ugh, somebody's got to fix those signs.
Connor! And just runs away.
Yeah. So this part was really interesting, and I want to take a second to discuss this. So you know how we were talking about the symbols on the cabins, especially the Apollo cabin? We were like, what is that, you know, what
strange
letter
symbol,
N
yeah.
or something? Like, it looked weird. And he said, ah, now that symbol I can see, talking about the Poseidon symbol, there is a story behind these. You are right. They are not Greek. They are not any known human language. That is intentional. You will discover what those are about later on. Good spotting, eagle-eyed fans. And my first instinct here is it's the language of the gods. It's like Olympian or something like that. They don't talk in Greek, they talk in Olympian.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I love that this clearly tells us that they're adding something to the show, because they don't really talk about that in the books as far as I can remember.
Yeah, not, no.
So either we're going to hear people talk in this ancient language, or it's strictly like a written language to show, you know, maybe ancient artifacts or something like that. But the fact that the symbols on the cabins are from this language, you know, that one symbol clearly, I think, is Poseidon, because it kind of looked like a person and, like, maybe I think it was, like, a triangle at the end, maybe on a wave or something like that. Yeah. But I'll be very interested to learn what the rest of them are. I think that's pretty cool.
I think you're probably right on the money, or pretty close with the Olympian, because that makes the most sense, especially since some of these people were noticing there were some similarities to, like, ancient Greek, or, like, you know, some of the symbols kind of seemed like they could be this or that. So, like, I would imagine Olympian might be, like, the root language that ancient Greek came from.
Yeah.
So, like, it was there millions and millions of years before any of these others, and so now human languages have taken from that. Because I could see them kind of doing that. And maybe, like, the gods instruct them of what symbol to use on the cabins or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I could see, rather than just using, like, Greek to...
Or even somebody like Chiron might know that language.
Yep. Also
that would make
possibility.
Sense.
Yeah. So there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
There, but it'll be cool to
I really like the idea. Somebody compared it to, like, oh, so maybe they're doing, like, you know, Valyrian, which is from Game of Thrones.
Yep.
So maybe we'll have a whole other language. I mean, there are people who, like, know how to speak Valyrian, like fans who have learned how to do that. I don't exactly think that Percy Jackson's going to go quite that in-depth, but, like, do I want to study those symbols and learn what they mean? Kind of.
I mean, I may or may not have purchased and had to return after a How to Speak Dothraki set for my brother once. He decided it wasn't his jam and I had to take it. But I thought it was really darn cool.
Yeah.
Like, they were going to teach you how to speak Dothraki. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So I would learn how to speak Olympian.
Uh-huh. That's one of the things that... Okay, well, this is a good transition. I was going to say, maybe that's one of the things that they can sell, like a merch, you know, a book about that. Because Rick also called the new t-shirts fire, which I thought was hilarious. I want to hear Rick Riordan be like, yeah, those shirts were fire. Because it would just make me laugh.
Can I just quickly say?
Yeah.
I didn't realize this was, like, new vernacular, because fire has been used before.
Yeah.
By, like, it was an adjustment from, like, 80s to 90s. People called things fire.
Oh, did they?
I swear, because I've heard it before.
Yeah.
But this season on Big Brother, there's a character, there's a guy named Turner who uses that's fire, that's fire, that's fire, like, right and left. That's totally fire, that's super fire, like, all the time. It's all he says, I swear. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing it everywhere.
Really?
And I'm like, this must be, like, what the kids are saying.
Yeah.
And since I'm not a kid anymore, I don't know what the kids are saying. And I just think it's hilarious. And it totally works. And I love that Rick is like, it's fire.
Everything I know about modern lingo is from Twitter or TikTok. Like, I usually stay up to date. So, you know, fire isn't necessarily a new one for me. Like, I've been hearing people saying it for a while. But I think you're right. Like, a lot of these things do kind of come back around.
Yeah.
So it could be older, but also just Rick saying the shirts were fire.
Yeah, that's so just great. I love it.
It's hilarious. And he also said that Disney is working on merch, so stay tuned. And, of course, like, I always have to mention stuff about merch because that's very exciting to me.
It's awesome. And who doesn't want one of those shirts? I'm sorry. They're fire.
Super fire.
Super fire. Yeah, that's right. I do. I really do like the. I like that they didn't just stick with what we've been seeing for so long. Like,
yeah.
I like that they kind of did a new spin on it, and it. I think it's
gonna it gives it a little more substance, makes it a little bit different, makes it the show's shirt, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing a lot of artists now using that in their artwork and stuff, and I really love that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a bunch of really random things going on right now, so I'm going to jump around a little bit. This first one got me very excited. I don't think this is going to be any surprise to you or anyone else, but there is a new standalone middle grade book coming from Rick Riordan Presents from none other than Roshni Chokshi. So excited. So Stephanie Lurie at Disney/Rick Riordan Presents has acquired in an exclusive submission The Spirit Mirror by Roshni Chokshi, who of course wrote Arusha and the End of Time, a middle grade novel pitched in the vein of The Graveyard Book, which I know nothing about, so I have no idea.
It sounds familiar, but I haven't read it. Maybe. Like, I've probably seen the title.
Hopefully, you know, fans of The Graveyard Book will be like, oh, this is really cool if it's similar.
Yeah.
Pitched in the vein of The Graveyard Book with Filipino mythology about an orphaned girl who is descended from Babylons. Okay, so it's spelled B-A-B-A-Y-L-A-N-S. I assume this is like a Filipino word.
Probably, yeah.
But it's a mystical healer and spirit guide.
That's cool.
Yeah, so sorry, I probably butchered that.
We'll learn how to speak it, I'm sure. We'll learn how to pronounce it later.
And who upon her 11th birthday must learn to harness her powers in order to bring her ghost parents back to life. Publication is scheduled for fall 2023. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about that. Standalone books, so, you know, I kind of like that. It's just going to be a one-off, not another huge series. We have enough trouble keeping up with Rick Riordan Presents, even though we're trying our hardest.
It's true. There's a lot.
Yeah, but I love that she's delving into another side of her culture and heritage. It's going to be something different, something, you know, I love Arusha so much, but the fact that she's writing from another perspective with a new character also makes me very excited. And we've seen before standalone books have gotten sequels and stuff, so might not be the end of the line for that. We'll see how it does.
And it's cool because a lot of the authors that are Rick Riordan Presents have projects outside of that, but I'm glad that she's kind of staying in the family too, because I didn't necessarily expect her to do all of her future books in RRP, but maybe this is, like, you know, just proving that she loves working with her people, so maybe she'll do some, continue to do some with RRP.
And I'm kind of surprised that she's doing it so quickly, because Arusha just ended this year, and I kind of expected her to, like, wait a couple of years. She has her adult novel, which is coming out soonish, I think, I don't think it's come out yet. She just had an anthology come out, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, recently, that was like a love-themed one, and I think early next year is that other, the adult one, and so I was like, okay, she's got enough on her plate right now, but to know that she's also been working on this is really exciting. I'm happy about it.
Definitely.
Speaking of books, there is an article from everydayreading.com, that's everyday, like, dash reading.com, 25 series to try if you love Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. I just thought that our listeners would enjoy this if they're looking for some new reads. If you've caught up on all of the Rick Riordan Presents books and all of the Percy Jackson books and everything else Rick is putting out and you're looking for more, there's a really good list here. I'm not familiar with a lot of these books, I have to admit, but there are a few Rick Riordan Presents books on here. Arusha is on here. The Stormrunner series is on here. All of Rick's other series, like Heroes of Olympus and Trials of Apollo, they're all on here. 39 Clues. But they've got some other ones too. Dragon Watch by Brandon Mull. Unwanted by Lisa McMahon.
Some of these covers look familiar, even though I don't know the series very well. Yeah, like the covers look very familiar, so.
Wing Feather Saga by Andrew Peterson and Pendragon by DJ McHale. I have heard of that one before. So lots of cool stuff, and it tells you how many books are in the series as well, which is helpful. You can either go for, you know, a 3-book series or a 10-book series, depending on your mood.
There you go.
But I will make sure to put that link in the show notes if you are interested. Now, so to kind of bring the tone down just a little bit, there's been some stuff going on across the internet, and I never really want to shy away from talking about these things because we want to do our part with our platform to bring attention to this sort of thing. So first of all, we have Rosanne A. Brown, who just put out her book, Serwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting. And unfortunately, she's been getting some negative comments about her, basically about the fact that she's written about racism in schools and all that sort of stuff. She's talked, if you want to see like the whole tweet series and everything, go to her Twitter. She's written a lot of really interesting things about it. She's shared some of the messages she's gotten. Some of them are pretty terrible. But I really wanted to kind of talk about this one thread that she has here because it's just important to keep this in mind. So she basically says, if you love a book, especially a book by a marginalized author, be sure to leave a review because the people who hate us definitely are. My book has only been out a week and people are claiming I'm giving children harmful messages by acknowledging racism in schools is real. And to be very clear, this isn't about all bad reviews. This is about the continuing pattern of marginalized authors getting our crap review bombed for daring to write against bigotry and white supremacy. Writers aren't supposed to comment on reviews, full stop. But what are marginalized authors supposed to do when bad actors keep coming for our livelihoods? That silence only helps the status quo. And I feel very much the same. I think that's really true. If they don't talk about it, then people who aren't going to go and check their reviews aren't necessarily going to be aware of that. And, you know, I have seen a lot of people talking about this, like, review bombing, like, the negative comments and stuff, and there are whole communities and groups that are dedicated to doing this. And it really stinks, especially for somebody like Rosanne, who has written a really fun book and is trying to bring her own experiences to this book and trying to say something with this book. And something that needs to be said, I think. Anybody who's listened to us knows, you know, how
our
we feel.
Yeah. On these things. Yeah.
So I think if you have not yet gotten this book, pick it up. Try to pick it up from an indie store if you can. And if you have read it and you liked it, please go leave a review for her, especially on Amazon. That helps a lot. Goodreads, too.
And if you can't afford to buy it, check your local library. I'm sure many of them have this book. Since it's RRP, those are not going to not be shelved.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's a really popular imprint, and my guess is you'll probably be able to find it. There's been a lot of talk in the last few years about review etiquette and how, as reviewers, we're not supposed to tag authors, especially in bad reviews. If you write a raving review, you're allowed to tag the author and say, I really loved your book, and if you want to read this, like, I really just want you to know how much I loved it. That's fine. You're not really supposed to tag an author in your bad review. If you feel the need to write a bad review about something because you don't like the book, that's fine. You're allowed to write your review. You just don't need to tag them in it. This is a different issue from that. Because, yes, and there have been some authors that have behaved badly and gone after reviewers for bad reviews that they were not tagged to see, but they went looking for.
Yeah.
That's another issue again, too. I feel like, Rosanne has a very, she has something interesting to say here because, yes, authors are supposed to leave reviews for readers. Reviews are supposed to be for readership and to find new books. But if you have people using reviews as a tool to bring down people with different viewpoints and they're doing it maliciously, then that's something entirely different.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that she has to be aware of it and go look for it and make note of it and tell fans of her books to please review it as well, because the only way I can balance out all this negativity from this small group of idiots is to you know, get somebody who loves my book to review it as well, like, to balance out the negative. And that's, it's really unfortunate that that sort of crap is going on.
Especially on publication week, like, this should be so happy for her, and I'm sure it is, and she's talked at length about how ecstatic she is, about the positive reviews that she has been getting from people, but to deal with this on top of that just really sucks, you know? Like, she shouldn't have to, and she's been getting backlash for even making that statement, telling her, like, you shouldn't have to beg for reviews and blah, blah, blah. And she's not trying to do that.
No, and honestly, there's no quick fix for this, because you can't make people earn a review on Amazon, because that's not going to work either. You know, authors need their books to be reviewed so that people will find them and read them. So that's not going to work. Honestly, I think the only way you sort of fix this sort of thing is to have review categories, and, like, if you're reviewing the quality of the book, it goes in this category. If you're reviewing story elements that you didn't love, it goes in this category. If you disagree with the author's viewpoint, it goes in this category.
Yeah.
So that if you're reading reviews, you can say, okay, I already know I agree with this author. I've seen her tweets. I understand her. I love her. I'm going to skip that section of reviews because that's not going to give me an accurate depiction of what I'm going to like about this book. But if I read the, you know, if I read the quality of the book reviews and say, oh, okay, you know, that has some mistakes and maybe that's going to drive me crazy. Maybe I'll wait till the next edition or, you know, like, there's a million things, but I don't think Amazon's going to be doing anything like that. Yeah. It's too much work, and that's sad because, you know, I would love them to care more about their authors, but they're not the best actors either. So basically, the, you know, the bottom line is support your authors. Support the authors you love, especially those that have something to say that is not always most popular for some people. Go out and support them, review them, tweet their, you know, share their links. Tell your friends. That's the best thing you can do.
It really is. And it's almost ironic that at the same time that all of this has been happening with Roseanne, is we've also gotten the Little Mermaid trailer, which you're like, what does that have to do with any of this? Don't worry, I'll make it make sense. But there's been a lot of backlash because, hey, Ariel is black now. And, like, I'm excited about that. A lot of people are excited about that. But there are some people who hate that, and I feel like they're the same people who are, you know, the same type of people going after Roseanne's book. But what kind of really ties all of this together is that Tracy Baptiste, one of the Rick Riordan Presents authors, did a segment with 11th Hour, which I think is just like a segment on MSNBC, and it was a little video segment. I will link to the video in the show notes. I watched it. It was really, really good. She obviously knows what she's talking about. She's had a lot of experiences herself, and as a middle grade author, she kind of knows how important seeing Black Ariel is to little Black girls everywhere. And she talks about The Little Mermaid, she talks about representation in literature and media in general, and the history of Black mermaids and folklore around the world, and the fact that there are Black mermaids, there are stories about that. And she will be writing the Moco Magic duology for Rick Riordan Presents, which is about Caribbean mythology. Not sure if she'll have, like, this is about, like, the jumbies, like, the spirit things. And I don't know if any of them will include the stories about mermaids, because there are, and they're tied, you know, back to African stories as well. But either way, that is coming out in 2024. Okay. It was 2023. Steph Lurie made sure I knew it got changed, which is good because it's hard to keep track of all of them sometimes.
Yeah.
But that will be coming out. And I thought this segment was really good. And the video starts off with all these little Black girls being like, wait, what? She's Black? Like, they didn't know when they tuned into the trailer. And I was like, this is gonna make me cry. Like, it was so good.
Funny enough, I haven't actually watched the trailer.
Okay.
But I have seen so many, like, responses to the trailer.
Yeah.
That I've heard parts of it and seen parts of it. I'm terrible at watching trailers.
Yeah. Well, you try not to sometimes.
I skip a lot of them if I know I'm gonna see the movie. Right. So I figured I'd see this one, so I don't look for it. But I've seen a lot of the bits and things, and oh my God, I've never heard, what's her name? It's Halle Bailey.
Halle Bailey.
Yeah. I've never really heard her voice. Like, she kind of started in, I want to say she did some Disney stuff.
Okay.
Prior to Little Mermaid. I might be wrong. But she kind of started as I was leaving watching Disney Channel.
Right, okay.
And so I didn't really get exposed to her or her sister's beautiful voices.
Okay.
And so I heard her voice, like, coming out of my phone watching TikToks mm-hmm. the other night, and I was like, girl.
She's like, really good.
It's incredible. Yeah. Like, I really can't wait to hear the Little Mermaid songs mm-hmm. come out of her mouth.
And I have to say, the CGI
was looks, it really good?
Oh, it was incredible. Because
I've seen it secondhand, but I haven't really... Yeah.
Like, even just, like, her fin, her tail, and, like, all of the water and the stuff around her, like, I have goosebumps talking about it. It was so good. Like, yeah, I'm really excited for this movie.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. Yeah. It's going to be really cool. And yeah, I saw a TikTok just last night. It was like stitched by somebody else. But like, they were saying, you know, for all of you people who are having a problem with this and need actual, like, real world context reasons why she would be black, here you go. And she went through and named all of Ariel's sisters and which sea they're meant to represent in the world. Because each sister is literally supposed to physically represent a sea.
Okay.
The Mediterranean Sea, the Baltic Sea, right. blah, blah, blah. Ariel is supposed to represent, I don't remember which one it is, but it's the one near Ethiopia.
Okay.
I forget exactly the name of the sea. But it literally is like a sea in Africa.
Right, yeah.
So, like, it makes absolute logical sense that she would be a black mermaid.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I was just like, that's awesome.
That's really interesting because I want to say it was Ethiopian, and if this is wrong, I'm very sorry, but I read a book, and Tracy was talking about African stories about mermaids, and one of them is Mama Wata, which is like mother of the sea, mother of water. And I read a book called Skin of the Sea recently that was very good. So if you're looking for, you know, black mermaids and stuff, go check that out. That was really interesting. And I almost want to say it was Ethiopian. So, like, that is, you know, it's all tied very closely together. So, yeah there's plenty of reasons why it's perfectly fine. I mean,
not that it's necessary.
No.
You don't need reasons.
No.
But if people need real-world reasons why this character specifically could have been black in the original, and maybe should have been, here you go. Like, this is an easy reason right here. And I loved that. I was like, just in case somebody needs that justification. I think it's, But I'm excited. It's going to be a good movie. I can't wait.
I think it's going to be great. But this is not a podcast about The Little Mermaid.
No, it's not.
So we should probably move on. Reed Riordan put up two articles this week. One of them was Back to School Advice from the Gods, which I think is hilarious. I have not read this yet, but they've got advice from Ares, Athena, Poseidon, Zeus, Artemis, Juno, Odin, Loki, Ares again. So that's pretty fun. Please note, none of these gods have ever gone through any formal schooling of their own, so their expertise on the subject is highly suspect. I love that. It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
The thing I really wanted to get to, though, was another quiz.
I mean, why not? We love a good quiz around here.
And we've taken a lot of the quizzes, like, from individual books. Like, you know, which character are you, whatever. This one is, which Rick Riordan Presents heroine are you? So I feel like this is a really good one to see who we really align ourselves with. So.
Very nice. Very
nice. You ready for this?
Yes.
Okay. So, first, pick your favorite fruit.
My favorite fruit's not here.
I'm sorry. I think, would it have been pineapple?
Yes.
Yeah, that was, that might have been my favorite too. We've got apples, bananas, cherries, raspberries, peaches, and watermelons. Probably gonna go with cherries.
Ugh, be my least favorite. I think I'm gonna go with watermelon.
I thought you were gonna pick bananas, and I could have said, favorite.
I was looking at apples, bananas, and watermelons, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna have to say watermelon.
Yeah.
It's the yummiest.
Pick your favorite genre of music. Rap, rock, dance, electronic, K-pop, and musicals.
Musicals! Easy for me.
Rap, obviously. Pick a fun Friday night activity. House party, camping, dinner with friends, exploring a new part of town, binging a new TV show, playing a new video game.
I'm gonna say binging a new show because that's a Friday night after work, turn on a show, be lazy, and then Saturday you go and do fun things.
By the way, you know, this is Disney related, so it's relevant.
It totally fits.
Yeah, Kristen already knows what I'm going to say. We've been playing Dreamlight Valley, and it's really good. And if you're wondering about whether or not you should play it, you totally should. It's amazing. It is currently free if you have Game Pass on Xbox. Yeah, it's also on Switch and PlayStation, though because it's a newer game and it's in early access, it does crash sometimes.
Yep.
So
save a lot. Save and it auto-saves on Xbox at least. Mm-hmm. Also, I just have to say, for anyone who has like younger kids who's maybe like questioning, it's not very violent.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like cooking and fishing and building things and collecting stuff so that you can give it to someone to make a thing. But you get to meet a lot of Disney characters and it's a lot of fun. So
it's like Sims meets Stardew Valley meets
Animal Crossing. Is what I've heard.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, what's that other game? Not Mandrakes, that's Harry Potter. The island one with the vines. We played it together.
Oh,
like, not together, but Drake Hollow.
Drake Hollow.
Yeah. It also reminds me of Drake Hollow.
It does have a bit
also,
of
also, could Percy Jackson be in there at some point?
I mean,
it's live action, so maybe not, but they could make cartoon versions of him.
Yeah. It would I don't fit. See why not.
Yeah.
I would not be completely shocked if further down the line they don't pull a Kingdom Hearts and put, like, Pirates of the Caribbean in there.
Yeah.
So, if they're gonna do something like that, they could easily do Percy Jackson.
Please add Percy Jackson to Dreamlight Valley. That would be amazing.
A little walker running around.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Anyway. Focus. Okay. Yeah. Now, what are you really doing on Friday? Going to bed early, cleaning my room, running errands, working out, catching up on work, babysitting. Ugh, catching up on work.
I'm not doing any of these things. I'm being lazy because it's Friday and I keep giving myself excuses. I'm gonna say running errands.
Okay.
I guess I would run errands on Fridays. Sure.
Pick your favorite Disney princess. Jasmine, Belle, Mulan, Tiana, Ariel, Elsa. Mulan.
I think I'm gonna pick Belle.
Yeah.
I like them all, though.
Megara!
I really love Jasmine, too. And I'm like, why is Jasmine not on there? And Anna? I love Anna.
Yeah.
My little awkward queen. She is a queen now. Oh my god. Anyway, sorry.
You going with Belle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you pull your last all-nighter? I couldn't put a book down. Ooh. I had to study. My friends dared me. My family kept me up. I lost track of time. I would never do that. Let's see. I definitely pulled all-nighters in college. Have I done it since college? I've definitely stayed up till like 7 a.m. reading a book, so I'm probably gonna pick that.
I was gonna say, I know I've done that, but if I had to say the last time I stayed up past 6 o'clock, 6:30, 7 o'clock, was literally because I lost track of time watching TikTok.
Oh.
So I'm going to say I lost track of time because it's true. Yeah. I think last night I was up way later than I intended. I started watching them at, like, midnight when I got home, you know, got home from something. And, like, it was 3 o'clock and I was like, what? All I did was watch a few videos.
Yeah, TikTok will.
It's insane.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, what's your worst school subject? Math, science, social studies, PE, music. I get straight A's.
Math.
I get straight A's.
I mean, I got good grades, but I always got B's in math because, I'll just say math.
Pick a strange pet. Tarantula, hedgehog, capybara, python, pygmy goat, axolotl. I love axolotls. They're so cute.
Me too, which is why I'm picking it. Plus, yeah. It's a water creature, and I really would love to have, like, a big, like, aquarium full of, you know, crazy fish someday. Yeah. That would be really cool.
Okay, since when is a hedgehog a strange pet?
I mean, I guess it's a little strange because it's so pokey.
I guess.
And they wanted to have a wide variety.
Pick your favorite book genre. Adventure, sci-fi, horror, nonfiction, family drama, romance.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Mine's romance. That's easy.
Gosh. I guess I'll go with horror. I've just been into horror more lately, so. Yeah. I have a feeling this might get me Paola again. What's your dream job? CEO, president, astronaut, famous actor, online influencer, zookeeper.
My dream job is a librarian.
Yeah. Mine's that's a writer. Not, I'm doing it.
It's not an option.
I think I'm going to go with zookeeper just because I think I would like being around animals.
I was kind of thinking of that because I guess that's maybe the closest being like a librarian on this list. I don't want to be an astronaut because space is scary. It's cool, but it's scary. Yeah. So I don't want to go out there. I just want to look at other people go out there. I'm going to say famous actor because the arts would probably be something closer to what I would want to do.
Yeah. You could star in musicals.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, if I could go be on Broadway or something, twist my arm, sure, okay. I'd do that.
I was not expecting who I got.
I don't know who I was expecting, but I'm happy with my result.
All right. Who is yours?
I am Arusha.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
The current reincarnation of the heroic Pandava Arjuna, Arusha is bold, kind-hearted, and extremely loyal to her friends and family. She has a bad habit of stretching the truth to suit her own interests, but she's growing out of it.
That's good.
I like it. I like it.
I'm Kim Min, who is from...
The one we read.
Dragon's Pearl.
Yes.
Yeah. A teenage fox spirit, an agent of the Thousand Worlds Domestic Security Ministry, cunning, clever, and a bit cynical, Min often relies on her wits and charm magic to trick and outsmart her enemies. I'm kind of into that.
Right?
She's way cooler than me, so that is really cool. I like that. Okay. Wow, that news segment was a whole episode in and of itself.
That was a lot.
Yeah, but that's okay because we're going to get into our main discussion now, and I think this one's going to go by a little fast. So it's our 50th episode. We're very excited. We're very grateful that we're still around for that, and we thought it would be a fun idea to look back on episode one and just see, like, how far we've come, both as a podcast and in terms of, like, the fandom and the news and the show and everything, and just see, you know, what's changed since we first uploaded our episode. I think it was September 30th, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close to a year ago.
Yeah, definitely. So the one thing that I remember off the top was, like, our audio wasn't that great. And I almost immediately had to get a new microphone, but I'm really happy with this one, so I'm cool with that.
We've definitely found a better way.
Yes.
In the 50 episodes we've done.
Yeah.
We've found what works for us, so mm-hmm. That's good.
That is very exciting. I also remember being super excited for, like, the potential that this podcast had. And I feel like we still haven't really tapped into the majority of that. Like, there's still so much more to come, so much more we can do. And I think as we get closer to the television show, hopefully we can do a lot more, like, interviews and just, like, promotional kind of stuff. I think that'll be really fun, but...
I also think it's funny that, like, it's been 50 episodes and we've started doing, like, the God profiles and the monster guides and all of that, and we still have not made it out of Lightning Thief. Like, there's so much to cover and there's so many topics we want to talk about, and we've done fun things already in other episodes, like the, you know, video game one and the if Percy could be at Disney World, like what that would look like. We've done all of that sort of stuff. So, like, we getting everything in all of these episodes, we're still just barely tapping into Lightning Thief.
Because we were just talking about that, which we'll mention again later, but we're still talking about the monsters from Lightning Thief, and it's kind of interesting to realize that, you know, we kind of knew going into this that there was a lot to talk about, especially when we broke it down into the different components, because you have all of Greek mythology to talk about, and then all of Rick's, like, take on that,
right.
So at least there's a lot of content. We're not going to be running out of ideas anytime soon.
True.
Yeah. I'm still obsessed with our logo.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah, I still love it so much. Thank you, Angie. And we still get compliments on it every once in a while.
It's
so.
Just so crisp and clean and not complicated and just, duh.
It's,
I love it.
It's great. I think we're going to have it for a long time to come.
Agreed.
One of the things, so I went back through our show notes for the first episode, and one of the things we were excited about that we talked about was the community of fans that we would be able to talk to and stuff. And obviously we found our listeners and we have some regulars who write into us and like, that's really awesome. But one thing I hadn't anticipated a year ago was the other Riordanverse podcast hosts that we've actually become friendly with, that we talk to a bunch, and they've been so welcoming to us. And it's been really cool, like not feeling like we have to compete with them, but like yeah. feeling like we all have different takes on the same subject and that there's room for us all, which I think says a lot about this fandom. And
everybody
I love
has
it.
A different approach.
Yeah.
And different listeners are going to like different approaches, and some will listen to multiple and some mm-hmm. will stick with one and be like, this is my favorite. And
yeah.
that's cool. And it's been really nice kind of finding them just as welcoming as you would hope they yeah. would be. Like, they've been really kind to us, and mm-hmm. and we appreciate it. So thanks to all you guys.
Yeah. And then there's Robert, who listens to every single one of us and constantly puts up great memes. Thank you, Robert.
Yes,
and
thank you.
I don't know that I could do that, but glad you are.
I'm not organized enough to handle yeah. that responsibility.
At this point last year, we didn't even have the official green light for the show yet, but I remember being pretty confident that we would get it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too worried, but it was still nice when we finally got it.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were talking about possible locations. They hadn't yet brought on James Bobin as the pilot director, so that feels Jeez. Like, yeah.
It's only a year ago, but right. man, that's...
Yeah. And I'm really excited that he got the job, because I just feel like, from what we know about him, from what Rick has said about him and how his kids are fans and everything like that, I just feel like that's a good person to do the pilot. So
agreed.
I'm excited. They had the open call for Percy. Walker wasn't even a twinkle in our eyes yet. And look how perfect he is now.
And we're all just so settled. Nobody, yeah. we're not worried. He's going to be fantastic. And we all know it.
It's so good. They were aiming for a 2023 delivery. We now know that it's likely to be 2024, which is unfortunate, but happens.
We will somehow survive.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We made it a year. We mm-hmm. can make it another year and 2 years. We can do it.
We'll be at like 150 by the time we get to the
and
TV
it'll be like,
show.
Okay, time to do episode reviews that yeah. we were thinking about doing when we started this.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, we can do episode reviews. That'll be fun. There'll be 8 of them.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to wait.
Another year.
For another year, at least.
We've been talking, though, like, when the show comes out, I'm sure there are, like, scenes that we'll break down really in-depth and, like, moments and, you know, stuff like that. It's not just going to be the episode reviews. I think we're going to be pulling from the TV show a lot, especially all the new content that they're adding and stuff. There'll be a lot to talk about.
Well, and when we talk about stuff like costuming and how that could change, and we could have an entire episode talking about like the set and the decoration mm-hmm. and how they've dressed these mm-hmm. cabins and what the cabins do, because you know they're gonna be amazing. Like, just
yeah.
we've seen the barest minimum of them and we're already like, yes, this
super
is so
impressed
cool. yeah. So like there's all kinds of episode fun for us to talk about, the score and the soundtrack or however they treat music in the show and all of that. It's all fodder to talk about.
Yeah,
so. Can't wait.
Lots of content coming up. The King Chronicles movie was announced a little over a year ago, and I specifically remember being like, it could come out anytime since Netflix never tells us anything, and like, they're still working on the script. So we definitely grossly overestimated how quickly they were going to get through that movie.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, script writing can go fast, or it can take forever. And if you're, especially something as dense and, you know, important as Rick's books,
mm-hmm.
they can, you know, there's a lot in Rick's books. He puts a lot of detail in. So I'm sure it's just figuring out what details need to be included and what they want to leave out and all of that. So yeah, it'll be fun. But yeah, it's been a whole year and we're still waiting on script. So
yeah, definitely. The books that came out that year, so this was still 2021, it was the rest of 2021, was Cursed Carnival, Daughter of the Deep, and Tristan Strong Keeps Punching. So I think especially Cursed Carnival and Daughter of the Deep made a huge impact for us, and,
mm-hmm.
You know, still talking about that anthology, it just recently, once again, got back onto the New York Times bestsellers list. Daughter of the Deep has been there. We have the movie rights
to
that.
Say, that's been optioned.
Yeah.
So that's another one. Yeah.
So that's really cool. And Tristan Strong just had another graphic novel come out. So, like, that's kind of still going a little bit. And Everything has been a huge success. And that's not even touching, you know, that was literally what we talked about in this episode, wasn't anything that came out in 2022, which has been a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So that's awesome.
Yep, yep, yep.
And I was also looking back at how we did the initial chapter reviews, and they were so different. We did chapters 1 and 2 of Lightning Thief. Of course, we stuck with the 2 chapters for a while. And the order was completely different in how we, like, I think we did quotes and moments first and then, like, notes.
How did we even change it?
At least that's how it was in the doc. We might have switched it when we talked about it, but we didn't have your notorious brief recap yet.
My super brief recap.
Yeah, so that was super interesting. We're both leaning down under the table to pet the cat.
She's in between us, so it's like, love me.
Yeah. Every once in a while, we're just like, ooh, lean forward, pet the cat. Oh, you gonna flop? Nope. You gonna flop here?
Go ahead.
Yeah, flop.
Good job.
Now she's leaning against both our feet. Our mascot is here.
Yeah.
What else? We hadn't gotten any feedback yet because we were brand new, which is fair. Yeah. But now it's almost a weekly occurrence.
Yeah, and so, I feel like some of our tried and trues from Hypable have found us again, which is lovely because we love keeping track and keeping up with you guys too. So that's lovely, and we've met a whole bunch of new people and have had some new, you know, very regular commenters, and we really just appreciate any and all feedback. It's really nice to hear that people are listening and have ideas and love hearing this.
And some really creative things that are really good fodder for us to talk about that add to the conversation. So
some of your what ifs are really well thought.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like they're sometimes a little more familiar with the series than we are because I'm like, I don't remember Heroes of Olympus. I can't think that far ahead to see, like, to figure out how what happens in Sea of Monsters is going to affect that. Yeah. So.
I'm an old lady and my recall is not so great.
That is true.
So it's really nice that there are people who are have really committed it to memory that they help us out.
So yeah. Great. So thank you, everyone. I feel like that was a very brief, like, 50th episode celebration, but I'm okay with that. You know, this is kind of still only the beginning for us, and we had a lot of really fun news to talk about.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of fun to, like, go back and see how we did that first episode. So that was cool.
Yeah. And, yeah, just again, thank you guys for being around and sticking with us, and hopefully you'll still be here when we do 50 more.
Yeah. We'll have to do something a little bigger for 100.
We weren't sure whether to go big for 50 or to just kind of keep it kind of tame, and I like that we got to kind of look back at what was going on, you know, a year ago, but for 100 we'll probably come up with something a little more impressive.
And if you have ideas, let us know. We are always open to what you guys want to see or hear from us, so be good stuff.
Agreed.
Okay, we are now on chapter 5 of The Last Olympian. I feel like it's going slow because we're only doing one chapter, but at the same time, I'm like, so much has happened already. Like,
I know.
There's a lot of meat to this book.
There is. There's just so much going on and so many layers to what's going on. So, okay, so yes, we are on chapter 5, entitled I Drive My Dog Into a Tree. Mrs. O'Leary bounds into Percy and covers him with kisses before he can see her coming, which is really saying something when you're talking about a hellhound the size of a dump truck. Anywho, Percy plays a little fetch before letting her out of the arena to do her business, and she bounds right up to Nico, who is standing in a clearing with Juniper and an old chubby satyr. Nico is happy to see Mrs. O'Leary, and she is happy to sniff him from head to toe. The others are not as glad to meet a hellhound, even a friendly one. Anyway, Nico takes her for a walk while Percy gets up to speed about the convo going on. Juniper was trying to get Linnaeus, the old satyr dude, to help her find Grover, but the council member was being a grump about it and refused to help. He keeps his beliefs that Grover is a traitor and has been exiled from their number, even when Percy reminds him that Dionysus and Chiron ex-nayed that at the council meeting not too long ago. Linnaeus refuses to budge, and Percy loses his temper a bit, grabbing the satyr by the shirt and shaking him while demanding he get his act together and lead his people against Kronos. Does this satyr dude really think Kronos is just going to leave the wilds and all the creatures that call them home alone? Anyway, Linnaeus leaves, and Nico brings Mrs. O'Leary back. Juniper is desperate and forces Nico to keep an eye and ear out for anything having to do with Grover. She then departs, leaving Percy and Nico standing alone. They quickly discuss Beckendorf, Nico talked to his ghost, Percy's dream and vision from Mount Tam, and Nico's family history, ending with, finally, Nico's big plan. Percy is still hesitant about this whole idea, but Nico insists that if they don't enact his plan now, they will run out of time. Percy reluctantly agrees, and Nico teaches Percy how to shadow travel, courtesy of Mrs. O'Leary. They are headed to Westport, Connecticut, home of May Castellan, to learn as much as they can about Luke. Dun-dun-dun! I feel like there's... It's a really unfinished chapter.
It is, like, yeah.
There's a lot hanging on that last bit. So, that's gonna be fun. Anyway, we should probably start with the fact that I cried in this chapter.
Yeah.
Because Beckendorf was Mrs. O'Leary's other best friend.
Yeah.
And I'm crying all over again.
I didn't cry. Shocking. But it was really sad, and it's, you know, I like that this whole Beckendorf thing isn't like he died, you know, and it's over. Like, he was a part of camp. He was there. People looked up to him. He had a lot of friends. He was very popular, and we're not forgetting the sacrifice that he made, which I think is really nice.
And Percy, like, detailing all the things he did for Mrs. O'Leary, like, making her a bone out of celestial bronze or whatever that'll last, and and putting details on her tag and her collar and stuff.
I loved that.
It's just really sweet, and it just goes to show how lovely a person Beckendorf was, in addition to being really skilled and an awesome child of Hephaestus. He's just a great human, and we will miss him dearly, that is for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so nobody at camp wants to be a pooper scooper, so especially not for a hellhound, so they let her out into the woods to do her business, which I just think is a funny detail.
I really had a lot of laughs when it came to Mrs. O'Leary and having to accommodate her size and all of that, and I loved when she attacked Percy and licked him, and I was like, do you think Percy's powers extend to dog drool? Like, could he keep himself dry from her drool? I'm guessing not, otherwise he would totally choose to do that, but...
Like, as soon as he knows he's going to Mrs. O'Leary, he just kind of is like, force field.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a very useful skill. I keep thinking about How to Train Your Dragon, and you know that doesn't come out. So funny.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And I'm sure Mrs. O'Leary's is just about as hard to get out.
Yeah.
That's probably true. Okay, so... Mrs. O'Leary bounds into the woods, and Percy follows her to, you know, make sure she doesn't get into anything, even though all the monsters in the woods are afraid of her, which I love
that, too.
But they run into Nico, Juniper, and Linnaeus, and we quickly learn that Nico wasn't actually supposed to be a part of this conversation, that he kind of popped in on them, and that's how they all ended up there. Juniper is desperate for any and all news about Grover. He's just been gone way too long. She doesn't think that this, you know, is something he would do. She's like, he would reach me. He would contact me somehow. And she's desperate. And Linnaeus is being a jerk.
I was so annoyed with him. He's not quite as bad as Salinas, but, like, I just wanted to get through this part because he was so annoying.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like, it's so reminiscent of... The Voldemort is back, no he isn't.
Yeah.
Which is basically all of Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
And that was the most frustrating book for me the first time I read it. And so I think this kind of reminds my brain of that so much. And it's like, you know, and in Harry Potter, Harry's the only one who knows. Like, the only one who saw it. Here, you've got a group of, like, 5-6 demigods and a human who saw it happen. And they were like... Pan died. We were there.
Yeah.
And they still won't believe them. And it's... Yeah.
And Annabeth, like, if you're gonna believe anybody out of that group, believe Annabeth.
Yeah.
You know? She knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. It's really frustrating that the satyrs are just so in denial that they can't admit that that's something that could have happened, and therefore believe they've exiled Grover, even though the council couldn't, because Dionysus wouldn't let them. But yeah, so that's all really frustrating, and I basically was trying to get through this part, too.
Yeah.
One thing that Linnaeus does kind of mention is that he says, like, you know, Grover's probably dead. And Juniper kind of, you know, starts to look at him and is like, no, he's not. I would know if he's dead. And Percy's like, empathy link. I would know if something happened. And the Linnaeus is all like, you know, empathy links, they're not dependable, like, those are garbage. But I feel like so much emphasis was put on the empathy link and how deadly it could be for Percy, even though it's been a long time that this link has been there, I feel like he would definitely know if something tragic happened.
Even if it didn't kill him, you would think something as big as Grover dying, he would feel a tingle or something.
Right,
you
that's
know?
What I'm saying. Like, yeah, something would happen that would feel off, and he would wonder, is that the empathy link? Like, even if he doesn't know from it, I feel like he would be like, that could be something, like Grover might be in trouble. Okay, so moving right along, Linnaeus continues to be a jerk, and Percy loses it.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't help. It feels a little out of character for Percy, which is kind of going to come with the territory here, because everything is outside of his norm right now. You know, he's gearing up for war, he's probably going to die, he's worried about all of this. So when Linnaeus, like, starts saying that, you know, Kronos' war is nothing to do with us, and why would we get involved, Percy just cannot keep his cool anymore, and he shakes him really hard and holds him by his shirt. And
which was really satisfying, by the way.
Right? And I couldn't reconcile that it was completely out of character, because it's not. Like,
no.
Percy does react strongly when people are wrong, you know, doing something completely against everything he believes in. And if you won't stand up against Kronos, who you can see has been wreaking havoc with his Titans, then what are you fighting for? Like, what are you ever going to fight for?
Yeah.
And that just,
Percy made a really good point, too, is like, you think Kronos is going to spare you? You think he's going to spare the satyrs and the dryads and the naiads and all of them? He's not. He doesn't care about you guys, so why won't you fight with us, kind of thing.
Well, and the wilds, like, Typhon is marching across the United States, and it's acting like a tornado, and it's uprooting all kinds of ecosystems, and that's not throwing the satyrs into a tizzy? Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
I think the only thing that was a little out of character, and I use that lightly, is him actually getting physical with Linnaeus, because that seems a little more extreme, but you're right. Like, a lot is going on right now. He's very stressed. He's worried about Grover. It's gonna come out some way. And honestly, I don't think Linnaeus would have listened to him if he didn't literally shake him awake and out of, you know, him burying his head in the sand. But I will say that anger, and we've talked about this a little bit, and I like that this is coming up now, that anger is always in Percy. Just think back to how he reacted when Ares was around. I mean, Ares has that effect on people, but it doesn't come from nowhere. And Percy's a very sassy kind of guy. He usually uses that anger, you know, he uses words instead of physically, you know, shaking somebody, but it's always kind of there. And with Walker's recent comments about, like, liking to explore Percy's anger, and Becky saying things about the fact that this isn't a darker version or an angrier version of Percy, it's just Percy, it's always been there. Here's your proof.
Yeah.
You know, and I really like that this scene's coming up now.
Yeah, it really is evidence, plain and clear, that sometimes even he can't hold back all the fury he has at the idiots and things that are driving him crazy in this world. And Linnaeus is not, he's not helping himself.
And I know you shouldn't lay hands on people, but again, I was very satisfied when he shook him.
Well, and he didn't really hurt him.
No.
He just scared him.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of, you know, he reined himself in enough not to hurt him, really, but he scared the bejesus out of him and sent him running back into the forest.
Nico's comments about the little pellets, so funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So funny.
So, yeah, Linnaeus just, you know, runs off. He's gone. We don't have to deal with him anymore this chapter. But Juniper is still standing there, and Nico has brought Mrs. O'Leary back, and so he kind of joins the conversation again, and Juniper is just so desperate that despite Nico telling her that if Grover passed on, he would be reincarnated into some other natural element or some other creature or something in the world, that he would not pass through the underworld in any way, shape, or form, Juniper cannot accept that Nico has nothing to do, that he can't help somehow if something happened to Grover. So she just basically, like, begs and pleads and forces him to agree that if he hears anything about Grover, that he'll report back. So Nico has an assignment, but it's an assignment he's probably never going to have to worry about. Because if Grover is alive, then Nico's not going to have any details. And if Grover is dead, he's probably not going to have any details.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. Okay, so then Mrs. O'Leary decides to try and pee on Juniper. So Juniper takes off and is like, nah, I ain't dealing with this. So that leaves Nico and Percy alone in the clearing, and they have a bit of a chat and a catch-up. Their first bit, Nico mentions, like, I'm really sorry about Beckendorf, and Nico, or Percy's like, you heard? And he's like, I talked to his ghost.
Yeah.
Like, Nico knows how to just drop a one-liner that's gonna just stop everything.
Yeah.
Because I can just see the look on Percy's face, like, oh yeah. Child of Hades, prince of the underworld, basically. Like, he, you know, he's well aware of what's going on down there. But I did like what Beckendorf had to say.
Yeah, before we get to that, I really like Nico being able to talk to Beckendorf's ghost or any of Percy's friends who have died. Like, that's so heavy, both for Nico and Percy, I think. But also, I feel like it's gotta help a little with the grieving process, too. Like, knowing where he is and knowing that he's okay and just, like, for us, when somebody's dead, they're gone. You can never talk to them again. You know, if you believe in the afterlife, you believe that they're somewhere better. But, like, Nico gets to tell Percy where he is, how he's doing. It makes it more real and tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that helps Percy with his guilt and with the grieving process.
Agreed. Definitely. I mean, because it's hard. I mean, especially with how Beckendorf died. Like, it's really emotional for Percy. So knowing that Beckendorf is in, you know, the underworld and is saying, like, Percy should not blame himself. Like, it's kind of, it's very sweet.
Yeah.
But I also loved the mention, Percy was asking Nico if Beckendorf was going to try for
Isle of the Blessed.
Isle of the Blessed, yeah. If he was going to, you know, come try again and have another, have another, what is it? Have
reincarnate?
Something like basically. That, yeah. And Nico says, no, he's waiting in Elysium for someone. And we all know who he's waiting for.
Yeah.
And I just think that's really cute.
Yeah.
And Elysium is no slouch, so he'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's doing all right. The fact that he was okay that he died, you know, he served his purpose. Like, I'm sure he didn't want to die, but, like, he did what he thought was right. He knows that his sacrifice helped his friends. And even though it didn't stop Kronos, it might have slowed him down a little bit. And, like, when you're a demigod, this is the kind of reality that you face. And I think that they're a little more prepared for death than we are. So, you know, it is very sad. But I think it helped me a little bit hearing Nico be like, yeah, he's all right, you know?
Yeah.
It's not ideal, but he's all right.
Yeah. Which is all you can really ask.
Mm-hmm.
So then they quickly move in. Nico gives a little hint that he hasn't gotten any more info about his family and his history, but he might have a new lead soon.
Yeah.
So
this is interesting to me because where is he getting these leads from?
Mm-hmm.
Who is he getting them from? Are they from dead people? Which I would assume because that's mostly who he talks to.
Yeah.
But this very clearly is setting up for something, which we know, but I'm curious to kind of keep the ball rolling with this.
Agreed. Which is why I was like, I have to mention it, even though there's basically no information.
Yeah. The information is that there is no information.
Exactly. But basically, after they talk about his family stuff, we get to Nico and his big plan.
Mm-hmm.
That we know at the end of Battle of the Labyrinth, we learned that he has this plan, but we still don't know what it is.
Right. And Percy thought it was really dangerous and didn't really want to do it.
Right. What we learn here, we learn again that it's still very dangerous, but that it requires that they're going to learn more about Luke.
Yeah. Yeah, because basically he says Nico wants Percy to become invincible like Luke.
Yeah.
So they have to learn about Luke's past in order to do that, which I would assume that if we knew why Luke was able to merge with Kronos, like, somebody would have told us already, because we've talked about that a bunch on the podcast, but I'm curious if there's, like, a little hint in there that could, like, tell us a little bit more about how he could do that, because I think that's sort of what Nico is trying to get Percy to do, which is a little scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. the whole thing is time sensitive. Mm-hmm. And Percy is trying to wait. He's trying to put it off. He is not ready to make a decision. Again, this is pretty dangerous, whatever it is. So, you know, he's like, maybe we wait a little longer. And Nico kind of loses his cool and is like, it has to be now. Like, we need. It's going to take some time to travel and to do the things we have to do. We have to go now if we're going to go. And Percy relents and says,
relents because he remembers Annabeth called him a coward.
Yes.
And that's what pushes him over the edge.
I know. And I was so mad. I'm like, see, Annabeth, your words have weight. Like, you can't just say these things. We all know why she was calling him a coward, but it weighs on Percy in ways she has no idea.
Yeah, and that she didn't intend.
Right.
But I think that, you know, it's really unfortunate. And I mean, we're not putting all of this on Annabeth's shoulders.
No.
Like, Percy has responsibility to think clearly, too, but he's still a child, you know, and he's still going to react to things like this. But it was a little frustrating to be like, ugh. Like, of course, this is what, you know, kind of pushes him over the edge. Hopefully, I mean, we know he survives and everything's fine, but hopefully this doesn't lead to anything too bad.
Right, absolutely. So they, you know, they make the decision, they're going to go, they're going to Connecticut to meet Luke's mother, who Nico has already been in contact with, and she's okay with them visiting. And so Percy said, I loved this. Percy was like, should we, you know, get the Pegasus?
Yeah.
You know, and Nico's like, they don't like me. I don't like them. We're not doing that. Time to shadow travel.
Yep.
And so this will be Percy's first shadow travel with Mrs. O'Leary.
Yeah.
I can't remember if...
Did he do
I think
before?
Nico... may have done a brief one with him before, or something
that feels
similar.
Right. Yeah,
I can't quite recall
because I remember him like feeling sick when it happened.
Yeah,
but I don't remember the exact like thing that happened there. So yeah.
But and I love that Nico like took the time to explain that like Mrs. O'Leary is going to be really tired after this. You can't do it all the time, but if in an emergency you need a way to get around, she can do this.
Yeah,
and
this feels very much like Night Bus to me, like a little, you know, going super fast and like the time and space like kind of bends and stuff, and that's sort of like the vibe that I get from this, but like way better than that because you get to ride a dog, so that's awesome.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So they make their way and they are off to Connecticut, and that is where the chapter ends. So it's like this chapter nothing happens, but everything is
important. It's a little bit of exposition. You know, we get an update on Grover, which is important, and it's a transition into the next thing.
Yeah.
But it was definitely necessary. And you mentioned, like, before the podcast, like, this is a shorter chapter.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a good thing. All the stuff that happened here was necessary, and I'm glad he didn't, like, pack it into another chapter.
Agreed.
Because it would have been, like, boom, boom, boom. It would have been tiring by the end of that. So.
And they're definitely about to have some heavy conversations, but I think there's probably some action coming as well.
Yeah.
Because it's been so much, like, catching up with people at camp and figuring all of that out that I think we're about to hit another big action beat. So
yeah,
we'll see what chapter six has for us in store next time. But we should do our favorite quotes and moments. Karen, do you want to do your quote first?
Mine was from Nico, and it's a little spooky. That's why I chose it. He says, "There's only one darkness, and creatures of the underworld can use it as a road or a door." There's only one darkness. For some reason, just, like, really satisfies something in my brain. I'm like, oh, that's creepy, but also, like, mysterious and intriguing, so...
And also a useful superhighway.
Yeah, exactly. Superhighway of darkness.
There's a book.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Okay, yeah, mine was an interaction between Linnaeus and kind of Nico. Linnaeus says, I won't answer questions with this hellhound sniffing my tail. And Nico is trying not to laugh.
Yeah.
He's trying so hard and goes, I'll walk the dog.
Yeah.
And, like, I could just see his snarky self saying, I'll walk the dog.
Yeah.
And just, like, wandering off. But, it's brilliant.
I know that we all love pure, innocent baby Nico. But, like, slightly grown-up sassy Nico, I am ready for that. Like,
right.
I want to see that on screen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a little while, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Okay, and then favorite moments. Mine was Mrs. O'Leary sniffing Nico like crazy. Yeah. Like, the minute she sees him, it's like, and then she, like, sniffs him from head to toe because he smells like all the dead things that she's used to smelling. So it's like, this is a touch of home for her. Yeah. And I just
also hilarious because every time we come home, we have to go up to Callie and, like, she has to sniff us forever. And, like, we bring a bag from the outside world. And I'm like, okay, time to smell the outside world.
And she loves, like, handles on bags because it transports all that stuff that's on your hands and the outside. She'll just sniff it for, like, whole minutes. She'll sit there and just over and over again. It cracks me up. What was your favorite moment?
When Mrs. O'Leary considered peeing on Juniper, that was so funny. And I felt bad for Juniper, but at the same time, like, Mrs. O'Leary is like, oh, you're a tree, right?
And I love how Juniper's like, I know what that look means. Yes,
yeah.
No.
I'm out of here.
I'm gone. See y'all later. Oh, Juniper.
Mrs. O'Leary was the MVP of this chapter.
Definitely. That is for sure. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts. If you like revisiting your favorite canceled and cult classic shows, consider tuning into Rewatchable, which has covered series like Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy and Angel, and many more. Most recently, we've also discussed all four Matrix movies. We also have Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that features our biggest hypes and gripes in fandom and life. We even post interviews with our favorite creators. Lastly, we also have Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which has previously discussed every episode of the show, conducted many interviews with the cast and crew, and will be covering the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Just please find a way to reach out to us. We love hearing from you guys. It's been really fun, so thank you so much. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that would be really awesome. You can leave us questions and comments or ideas for content or episodes you want to see in any of these places. We do have one little bit of feedback this week. Karen, do you want to take that?
Yes, this is from Instagram, and I think it was a comment on last week's like little post that you did on Instagram from JKWalking18. Thoughts on trailer, pulling necklace out of bag, does not have beads, so think it was when he got to camp, him leaving the Hermes cabin, walking to Poseidon's cabin. And I realized this after we had recorded because initially we were like, oh, that shot of Percy pulling his necklace out of his bag was him in the Poseidon cabin, but it wouldn't have been. It would have been him in the Hermes cabin because that's where he would have gone first. And then you can see him with the necklace on walking to the Poseidon cabin. So I was going to mention on this week's episode anyway, but appreciated somebody writing in and making sure we didn't forget. So that's just a little thing to add to the trailer, but
is that, I'm trying to remember, I know they get their beads at the end of camp. Mm-hmm. New campers, do they get their necklace at the end of camp? Because I don't remember him getting, like, the empty string at the beginning of camp. So I feel like that's a bit of a little change, that they gave him, like, the string the bead goes on at the start of camp when they give him his Camp Half-Blood shirt.
Yeah, and I don't know if they ever mentioned whether or not they give him, like, the string ahead of time.
Because I just always assumed that you got your string when you got your first bead. So, like, Percy is new at camp and doesn't have any beads, so, like, he would wait until the end of the year and get a new string with this bead.
That being said, I kind of like that they get the empty necklace because it shows that they're new at camp. I mean, it singles them out a little bit, which could be unfortunate if you're around a bunch of kids, but
especially Aries.
Yeah, exactly. But I kind of like that it's like, okay, you're the newbie, you're the new kid, you earn your bead at the end of the summer. It'll be really satisfying to, like, have the empty necklace and then be able to put the bead on after.
Yeah, so it's just a thing I was like, I'm not sure if that's how that went, but hey, they might have to change little things. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll get through. Okay, so that wraps up this episode. Next week, we're thinking we're going to be doing another monster guide.
Yeah.
Probably Echidna and Chimera. We're thinking we'll do them together since they're kind of related to each other.
Yeah. Mother
and child.
Spawn? Mother and Spawn.
There you go.
Yeah.
That might be an episode title.
I'm kind of excited about this one because I don't know anything, really.
Yeah.
We mentioned Echidna in one of the previous, I want to say it was like a deep dive from one of the gods. Echidna was mentioned, but I don't really know anything about their origins or anything like that. So this one's going to be a really interesting one for me.
Definitely one that I won't have a lot that I previously knew. Like, right. The Minotaur, you know stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of those, but
that one's in pop culture a lot.
Right.
But, like, I mean, Chimera definitely Teen Wolf.
Has Teen Wolf implications.
And there's a new show with a character that's a Chimera, so that's kind of interesting. But, like, Echidna, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be worth diving into.
Yeah.
So, until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.